Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Definitive Crusade. I'm your host, the 13th Crusader. With me today, I have Lizzie, Freya, and Freddie. How's everybody doing?
Doing
pretty
well.
Good.
Excellent. We're going to jump right into it today, and we're going to start discussing recent releases of DC Comics, starting with Justice League No Justice. We have a group of writers collaborating, Scott Snyder, James Tynion, Josh Williamson, in a new Justice League adventure. The recent issues of Justice League have ended, and this is where we're starting with now. There's a new threat to the universe. So without further ado, Lizzie, what do you got to say about the series so far?
So far, I'm really liking it. I was kind of hesitant at first, not to read it, but I was not sure if I was going to like it, mostly because we just finished with Metal, so it was like, it felt like another event happening, and I was like exhausted. But so far, it seems like it's very self-contained. I really enjoyed number three, but so far, I'm very happy with it.
Excellent. You know, with the Justice League ending, one thing I was clamoring for was, like, you know, those books, I didn't walk away with anything that I felt was strong. You know, it's almost now it's as if it's a distant memory, even though it's a recent run. So when those runs ended, and I'm including Justice League of America, I'm like, okay, I am looking forward to No Justice, because there has to be something impactful with Justice League that is desperately needed. It's almost as if I don't care what the roster is at this point. Just give me something new and fresh. I'll add more to that in a minute. So, Freya, just want to get your thoughts on Justice League No Justice.
Okay, so... Okay, story-wise, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
It did kind of... I agree with Lizzie. It's just, I wasn't looking forward to another event.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of hesitant to even pick it up, but I was enjoying story-wise. I always love Beast Boy. He's my favorite, you know, Titan, Teen Titan, because I love his stupid jokes. They're cringy, but I love them. So, you know, I love him. So I actually like all of the team-ups. They're interesting, not who you really expect. I kind of find it amusing how Brainiac doesn't view Green Arrow as a hero, so he's the only one running around.
True. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was like, okay, that's all right. Poor Green Arrow. No one recognizes him.
Which, real quick, makes me wonder. Like, I wonder if Roy Harper got captured too, because that would be sad if Roy Harper was viewed as a threat or a hero, but Green Arrow wasn't.
Who?
Like, come on.
That's I do want to but okay, so my main issue is everything else is fine. The artwork, okay, in the first two books it was all right. I mean, it wasn't my favorite, but I didn't have any real problems with it, except for like in issue two, page 8, Wonder Woman's nose is very unfortunate looking, but other than that it was pretty solid. Except then issue 3 came around, and they switched artists.
They should switch back.
Yeah, they really do, because it was so bad I couldn't even read it. So I got far away through the issue and just had to walk away.
Yeah.
It was Birds of Prey level of bad. Like, I think it may be even slightly worse, because I actually couldn't even finish the book, because the art was bothering me so much. It was horrible, and I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I can't say anything positive about it, and I really try to.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I can't. I hate it.
It's okay, Freya. We got you.
I agree with that sentiment in regards to the art, to be honest.
Yeah, agreed. Definitely agreed. Freddie, what are your initial thoughts of Justice League No Justice?
I think my first thing is that I'm really loving the pace, and the release schedule.
Mm-hmm.
If this dragged out for 3 months, you know, for three issues or longer, I would not like it as much as I do now, possibly. But just the fact that it's like, here's a whole bunch going on and we are powering through it. It's a nice change of pace from a lot of the other events we've had. And not just Metals, but even like Doomsday Clock and other stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of refreshing to have this weekly pace. And the best part is if you get behind for a week or two, then you just get a whole bunch to read right away. So it's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. I like, you can kind of see the seeds of change that are possibilities from this. Mm-hmm. One thing is releasing all of the planets in issue 3 from, you know, like the little mini planets or whatever you call them. Mm-hmm. It's, you can just clearly see like the Green Lanterns, and we know that we're going to get a new cosmic Justice League book. I think Justice League Odyssey is what it's called. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be cool. Like, clearly there's going to be a bunch of new things out there, because you can't just throw new stuff and we're just like, well, we haven't found that this whole time, but it's kind of built into the story why. And you can see things like that are going to be happening that will help shape the future, or at least give, you know, seeds of new things to come. But as far as story-wise goes, I'm really digging. I totally bought into the plan to separate them into their, you know, four classes instead of just the regular teams. I thought it was really, what's the right word? I think it really just kind of freshened things up a bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we've seen the Justice League together for, you know, since the 60s, with pretty much the same team the whole time. So it's really nice just to see it all split up and having to work with new people. And even, you know, even Starro, like, who knew I would like Starro as a quasi-hero? Like, that was pretty cool. And then, you know, when he went to fight up against the Titan, you're like, ah, man, that kind of sucks. Like, I was actually really liking you. So I'm hoping he's not dead. Spoiler alert, sorry. But, yeah, it's just, you know, we're getting to see characters used in a way that we don't usually get to see, and I'm really loving that. Mm-hmm. And I'm really can't wait to see the aftermath from this in particular.
Don't starfish, aren't they able to regenerate their limbs?
That's what I was thinking. So, I mean, even though he's ripped in half, I didn't think he was going to be dead, but, I mean, they just said it in the book, so I was like, I hope that's not his end.
He'll be back.
Yeah. I mean, he's the original Justice League villain, so he should be around. But no, yeah, it was, I just really digging it. And I love the idea of the four different, you know, energies of the universe or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, where they set it up for issue 4 is going to be pretty slick with the, you know, the four trees on Earth. And it made total sense where they're all placed, so it's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm.
You know, as I mentioned a short while ago, I was clamoring for something new with Justice League. Just anything. Well, here's what we got. We got, instead of anything, we got everything. Where we have, you know, over 20 heroes and villains combining their skills and abilities in order to tackle the universal threat. I'm not going to lie. Issue 1, I was not impressed with. I think the first couple of pages where you see the Green Lantern Corps holding the Source Wall together, I'm like, you know, this isn't your typical wall, and, you know, where's the rest of the New Gods? That's their space. You know, I'm still a little upset with the ending of why the Source Wall was broken in the first place, but whatever, it is what it is. The door is open, and I guess that does open more opportunities for newer stories to take place. As this series started to progress with issue 2 and 3, you know, Brainiac's involvement, you know, the threat of the Omega Titans. I'm not going to lie and say that it did not remind me of the DC versus Marvel book in the 90s, where we had the two brothers coming in and threatening to destroy each universe. This kind of reminded me of that. But still, you know, with Brainiac, you know, recruiting all of these heroes and villains for a reason, it was an interesting change of pace, and it was an interesting to see how these guys gathered and, you know, try to tackle something like this. I got to say that the part of the, as the story kept progressing, I started getting more impressed with the overall script or the story. You know, with the heroes discovering a whole bunch of shrunken down planets, that I liked. The fact that, you know, Superman has to team up with Sinestro, these two guys were battling it out not that long ago, and here they are forced to work together. Damian Wayne is Damian Wayne. You know, his interaction with Dr. Fate, to me, was kind of classic. We all know what Dr. Fate can do, and speaking of Fate, I'm not a fan of the costume design. Love the character, not the costume design. There's still a lot more to obviously occur with this series and what it's going to mean for Justice League going forward. You know, some of these villains, you know, seeing Deathstroke working with Batman and with Lobo, very interesting. That definitely piqued my curiosity to see how that kind of interaction would take place. And yeah, you know, Beast Boy is definitely a fan favorite of a lot of people out there, but to throw him on that team, I was like, wow, poor kid. But, you know, I do appreciate the personalities that all the creators are trying to infuse with these guys. And, you know, now the way that issue 3 leaves off, obviously sooner or later, all of these issues are going to end up going to Earth. It's great what happens with Brainiac, and for your readers out there, you'll be thrilled to see a second Brainiac come about in Vril Drox, if I'm pronouncing it right. Definitely won't be able to spell it. So, you know, I'm definitely interested for what's coming forward with Justice League, because the other series were just not doing it for me. And if this is what we're getting now, you know, kind of a, is there such a thing as event fatigue? I think so. But you know what? It is what it is. It's there. I do like that it is, like what you said, Freddie, that it is a weekly release.
And it's short term. I mean, it's right. Not like the 52 run where it's for a year. Like, this is
right.
We got a month and some specials, like, and we've trashed Justice League almost the entire Rebirth run. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't that good, and this is just shaking things up. So hopefully, and then there's, like you said, there's a lot going on. There's 20 plus heroes in one book, all, you know, with important roles. But I'm cool with that for a short time. Mm-hmm. Because I know what's going to come out of it has some hope, because this story is pretty interesting. I mean, it might be the most interesting story with the Justice League since Rebirth started. So, I'm pretty happy with that.
And who's not excited with Martian Manhunter?
Yes, yes.
I'm really excited that Starfire is actually being treated like the warrior princess she should be.
Agree. Like, you know, I love that team.
Because sometimes with Starfire, they're like, oh, she's naive, and it almost comes off as, like, stupid. But
right.
Star is, like, a tactical mastermind. Like, she's a warrior princess.
Yep, I've always said that she's probably going to be able to kick the asses of a lot of other warriors out there.
I was like, she
no doubt.
Go toe-to-toe with some big hitters. Like,
right.
For more credit, I feel like sometimes writers just forget what Starfire's capable of.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. And I think the best written part, and maybe even artistic, even though it was in issue 3, was that the panel with her discovering that Tamaran was part of those collected worlds. The look that she's giving off there was actually well drawn, in my opinion. But I agree, Starfire's personality has just fluctuated so much. But this is the Starfire that I definitely like to see, and it sounds like you do too. So, but yeah, definitely is that Team Mystery. Team Mystery, definitely my favorite team of the four. Yes, mine is Starro.
I like Starro, man.
I just don't like the way they write him. Like, hey guys, what's up? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It is a bit different, but I don't know. It's different from who he's usually is.
Right.
But I'm not mad at it. But no, I was gonna say, you're right about them making Starfire dumb, because I mean, she's really the alien version of Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's just naive to our way of things.
Right.
She's not stupid. She just, you know. It's like when Wonder Woman first had ice cream. This is wonderful, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she's that. And sometimes she just becomes that in everything. And maybe that's because of, like, Teen Titans Go and things like that. Mm-hmm. When she's, you know, when they're all just little kids. But I feel like, yeah, you're definitely right. She does get stuck in that, when that, I don't think, is the best portrayal for her at all.
Because, like, in theory, she should act like, if of me when I first studied abroad for like 4 months in Ireland, and I was like, what are you people doing? When I'm like, what do you mean you don't have hot sauce? So she should more just be confused about cultures and customs and not just a moron. So right. I appreciate that she's not a moron.
Right. Completely agree. Completely agree. What's funny is one person or character we know that's not a moron in Amanda Waller. Once again, she's found her way in the pages of DC comic books. She's just everywhere. And, you know, you get a sense of, like, when you start seeing her, like, here we go, you know, kind of like Luthor, except Luthor is out in space, but she's on Earth, and she's obviously trying to protect Earth's best interests. She doesn't care who the hell heroes are around. And then you're like, wait a minute, is she going to be, you know, saving everybody? So I was like, okay, that would kind of made the interaction with her and Green Arrow a little interesting until issue 3, where I was like, okay, back to square one. But, you know, again, there's a lot of characters here. You know, each of these characters have fans. Some of them are a fan of all of them. It's very interesting, again, the lineup that they're choosing to go with. And I got to agree with what you said, Freddie. We're not getting 52 issues of this, but this is going to go 4 ways. So very interesting to see how this is all going to shake out when all is said and done. Any further questions or comments on Justice League No Justice?
They shouldn't have gotten rid of the fishnets on Zatanna.
I agree with that.
Yes. Yes. How dare they?
I miss Dee's old costume. My favorite Zatanna costume will always be her bombshell costume. I own that statue. Like,
nice.
But I also, I'm just, like, happy to see Zatanna. Because Mystic U was crazy good, and I was like, I want more Zatanna. And I was like, oh, then we're getting Justice League Dark after this. And I was mm-hmm. like, all right, I'm satisfied for the moment.
Yeah, I'm not too much of a fan of the Brainiac line of clothing that this series is trotting out there. But
I feel like, just statistically, historically speaking, the smartest people in the world are not known for their fashion sense, in Brainiac's defense. Like, no one was like, man, Stephen Hawking is just really rocking that pantsuit, you know, like, but so I'm gonna give Brainiac the you know, the benefit of the doubt there.
Fine, I'm throwing my pantsuit out.
I just want to say, I feel like, I don't feel like any character is being portrayed wrong.
Agreed.
I think whoever's running the show on this is really, this team understands who everybody is supposed to be, and no one feels out of character. Some people aren't getting the spotlight as much, but I don't feel like that's not portraying them properly. Mm-hmm. They just want the spotlight. But everyone that they are using, it's like, oh yeah, that's them. So yeah. I'm happy. Mine is Starro saying dude and stuff.
Yeah, that's probably the only thing that really is like, come on, when I'm reading it. But other than that, you know, the what was Starro's role in here? No question. You know, you want somebody like that on your side, because let's face it, if it comes to the end of the universe and you're all you have, it's good that he's on your side rather than against. So more on the series obviously to come, and I can't wait to see what happens with Amanda Waller and Green Arrow. Just felt like we needed to shout him out a little more. Yeah, poor Green Arrow was left behind. Here you go. You got three.
I mean, maybe I misunderstood it, but I legitimately thought Roy was down there because he was like, I'm not going to let you kill my family, which I guess he meant just any superhero, but I legitimately thought, like, Roy and Canary were down there.
Who? Not.
Star-Lord? Who?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one arrow to take down 3 Omega Titans, and it took the rest of the Justice League times 4 just to deal with one. On Brainiac's own planet.
He's got that one trick arrow. It's fine.
Oh, man. I can't wait to see what kind of trick arrow this one is. Oof. Wow. It's a Green Arrow. Wow, man. Woo. Whew. Get out. You're on our side. All right. Speaking of crazy battles, let's talk about a rebellion in Atlantis that's happening right now. All right, Freya, what do you got to say with Mara, Queen of Atlantis, number four?
All right. So I have been really enjoying this story because I love Mara so much. I think she's my favorite female in all of the DC universe. I think it's fantastic. So currently they're just trying to, it's the enemy of my enemy is my friend type of deal. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to get, I can never say it right, like Debel, where she's from.
That's how I pronounce it.
To come and
it.
Help them.
Yeah. Debel. Same.
So they're just there and they're not too happy with her, obviously, because she just kind of abandoned them, and Orm's with her. And I love him as a villain, so it's kind of weird seeing him kind of be a good guy. So other than that, and then it's a lot of like political stuff, which I think is how Aquaman should be treated, even like the side ones, because he is, it's all royalty and stuff. So I feel like it should be more Game of Thrones-y type stuff and people backstabbing each other and whatnot.
Agreed.
Which is why I really like this, because mm-hmm. it is a lot of like double deals and, you know, going behind each other's backs and betraying family, and just it's fantastic. I also liked seeing Mara's home city, because I don't remember actually really seeing it besides her like flashbacks in her mind. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice to actually see it and see how it is and where she grew up and, you know, why she was the way she was and, you know, everything. And yeah, I like the little twist at the end. However, the one thing I'll say I didn't like is they kept flashing back to Orm's family, mm-hmm. Serpent's family. And it felt like it was just filler. It didn't really add anything to the story. And then until Tula was about to leave, mm-hmm. then it added to the story. But they have multiple times when they're in the middle of a battle and then just goes to them and away from the battle. And it's like, oh, I don't care. I don't care if you're walking on the beach and playing with a puppy and talking to Orm. I really don't care. You know, like, this woman obviously wants to marry Orm anyway, so Tula talking about it, is it gonna freaking, you know, change anything? She's not trying to solidify anything. She was already gonna marry him, so, you know.
It's like they go from a war scene, like, help me, it's got, ah! Then all of a sudden it just cuts out to coffee time and
yeah.
You know, all the Blame birds and all that stuff. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Lizzie, what do you got to say about Mara, Queen of Atlantis 4?
I definitely agree with a lot of Freya's sentiments, including this woman that I don't care about, Erin. I also was really... This is going to sound terrible. I don't know, why is she drawn so frumpy? Like, she has a weird hairstyle... That she just deserves better hair. I think I just hate her hairstyle. But just...
Where's Brainiac when you need him?
She needs some Brainiac clothes, apparently. Like, she's wearing a turtleneck under a sweater. Like, she clearly has either a thyroid issue or circulation if she's that cold. There's just a lot of things happening. But in regards to the politics in this book, I really like it. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge Aquaman fan, but this is making me want to get into Aquaman, if only because I'm just really fascinated. Like, I love politics in any book if there's, you know, heavy political themes. So this is right up my alley. I picked it up because it was Mara, and I just love her look, and I'm very happy I did pick it up just on a whim. It can be slow at points. Mostly those points are when Erin is there, but when she's not there and it's, you know, the heart of the story, it's really a lot of twists and turns.
No, it's my only regret with this series is that it's not going to be longer than 6 issues, because I got to agree with what was said earlier that, you know, we're seeing flashbacks of Mara's history or her past.
Yeah.
Especially in an area under the sea that has not really been, it's been talked about, but never really delved into, you know.
I mean, I would like to see after the completion of this, we do get an ongoing, which is, you know, another,
I hope so.
Mara, Queen of the Atlant, or like Mara and Aquaman, like Aquaman, something like that. I don't. I mean, I would just like to see her get an ongoing, because I feel like if it's anything like this, with deep political roots and happenings, it could be very successful.
There's a lot of different things going on, the under the ocean, it's, there's still a vast majority of water that's been unmapped. So with that, if you put this into comic books, there has to be other kingdoms other than Atlantis. This is just one of them. They've obviously been at odds for thousands of years. Are there more out there? Now they're starting to team up and enemies and enemies and friends or whatever. And they're going to try to save Atlantis, but there's definitely a lot of threats that have yet to be brought out into the comic book. But what does make this interesting is the relationship Tula has with Orm, or the Ocean Master. They're half siblings or what have you. They have ties to Zabel. Zabel now has ties to Atlantis. So there's that big circle, and you see that connection with all of them with this series, which is great. In the pages of Aquaman, yeah, you're gonna see all-out war. Finally, Aquaman and the whole Aquaman and Mera thing, it's finally getting the attention it deserves, and it's really, really a well-done book. And again, my only regret is to hear that this is only a 6-issue series. All right.
It might be why Mera can now breathe underwater again.
Yeah,
Randomly.
she must have recovered. Maybe she got tired of seeing Eren's clothes.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I would learn how to breathe underwater real fast too if I had to hang out with that lady.
Hey, I think she's sexy. What do you think, Freddy?
Definitely sexy. Definitely.
All right.
Each his
By the
own.
way, I'm totally from listening to what you guys said. I'm totally down for like Game of Thrones underwater. Like, that'd be
Yes,
awesome.
but with less sexual assault
And more Eren.
Less sexual assault,
and
but
more
maybe
assault.
some consensual sex. I'm okay
That's
with
fine. That's
that.
absolutely fine.
Let's make Aquaman and Mera put it on Black Label, make it adult rated. I'm down with that. We get some water dragons. It'll be sick.
Just make it written by Zenoscope. It's fine.
Definitely, Mera is an awesome book for you listeners out there. It's still not too late to get into this series. It's only 4 issues deep. Don't wait till the last minute. It's definitely a really, really good book. And the best part about it is it all relates to the Aquaman book as well. So you're getting even more pages with your favorite underwater characters from DC Comics. And speaking of fashion, I do like Orm's suit, and I do want to get one. All right. Let's move on to the Superman special. All right, Freddy, what's happening with this Man of Steel?
Right, so first things first, when I picked this, I had not read it yet. I had not read a single comic that week. I said, oh man, Superman special, something must be going on. Newsflash, nothing goes on in this issue, but it's not a bad thing. This really, there's not even like a real villain in any of these arcs. It's really just about kind of back to basics for Clark and Superman. It just feels like they're reminding us that they know that they didn't forget who Superman's supposed to be. A lot of it so much is just doing the right things and affecting people. So there's an arc. If you remember, I really hated this arc, but the Manchester Black arc earlier this year, I mean, maybe last year at this point. I did not like that at all. But they're going back to it because they left one of the losers on Dinosaur Island. So they're going back to bring him home. And it wasn't, there's nothing, there was no point in bringing him home besides just it was the right thing to do. And getting him acclimated to the new world and getting his back pay for 80 years from the VA, a lot of just little things that was pretty kind of cool. Another arc of I was, and as I was thinking this and I'm reading this, I'm like, man, they're getting back to Superman basics. I'm not a biggest Superman fan, but also I just think that a lot of people don't write him well, which is the biggest problem. And this is like, yes. And then the second arc starts, and you just see like a giant monster tearing through Metropolis. And I'm like, ah, they lost it already. But it's not about the monster. It's just about helping this old man who, you know, he doesn't want to lose all the photos as this building's collapsing, and Superman just brings him a puppy, you know, to basically try to mend his losses and stuff. So I don't know. It wasn't Superman punching things, which is physically what he's best at, but this is just about the people. And there's a line that a flashback to something his dad said was, "Your strength will never define you. It's what you value that will." Mm-hmm. And that just that one sentence resonates through this whole. It's like 55 pages. It's a long book. But that's without ads.
Right.
So yeah, it's there's a lot of story here, and it's not super riveting or anything like that. You're not on the edge of your seat. It's just good old fashioned Boy Scout doing his thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not against that. I'm not a Superman hater. I just like when he's written well, and I thought this was pretty well.
Listen, I love dogs more than the next person, but if I say, "Hey, get me that picture and you bring me a puppy," we got problems. So
I'm just saying. I thought that was a tad weird, but yeah. I mean, I don't want to detract from my point because of that. Yeah. Real quick, I do have one question before before you guys keep going. Mm-hmm. Did this change things? Because it looked like his parents died when he was like super young. Because the flashback to the funeral has two caskets. They're talking about the Kents. Krypto is a puppy, and Clark looks like he's maybe like 19, which doesn't seem like Superman history, at least that the recent one. So I'm super confused at that part. So I don't know if that's a change or what's going on with that. But anyways,
maybe he was rebirthed. It's quite possible. So long as they have the proper fashion sense, it's all good.
That's my only concern, really.
Yes.
What I read comics for.
It is a good point, though, because...
Don't get me started on Martha Wayne's pearls.
It's a good point that you bring up Freddy at the funeral, because, yes, I too was confused with that. But who knows? Freya, thoughts on Superman Special Number 1?
So I also was confused about the funeral. Mm-hmm. I thought for some reason flashback at being at Bruce's parents' funeral. Mm. That's how confused I was. I thought all of a sudden he was at the Wayne's funeral for some reason. And it's like, wait, okay, never mind. Because I thought he looked really young. And like, and Krypto, I didn't know it was a dog when I first saw it. I was like, that's an ugly cow. So I thought it was just a little cat, like a calf. I thought it was a calf because his ears are all weird looking. And anyway, besides that, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was just Superman being, you know, Superman, his little Boy Scout. Mm-hmm. And you know, I liked it. There was a lot of he really does need to wake Lois Lane up when he's going to disappear into another dimension. Not leave a stupid letter in the bed. She didn't even find it, apparently. It was good. Like Freddie said, nothing happened except, you know, be a good person and, you know.
Keep your promises. The
old man, yeah, with the old man and the dog. Mm-hmm. I would have understood the whole, you know, bringing me a dog thing instead of pictures, because a dog is a living creature and is more important than inanimate objects. Mm-hmm. So he obviously, you know, he values life more than objects or material things, which is actually very good. And that was what I think they were trying to show, was that he went in to get the pictures, he noticed the dog, and so he decided to get the dog first and then maybe get the pictures, you know. Life is more important. So, and you always have your memories anyway. You don't need a physical object to remember someone.
True. However, I'll counter. Yeah, the dog, definitely you want to save the dog, because definitely worthwhile, of course. But Superman saw the picture the guy could have said, hey, you know, use your x-ray vision to carve out a picture of my wife on the ground or something. You know, it, I mean, I guess the moral of that story is, you know, that Superman's there to try to help everyone. He can't win every battle. And the theme stays true throughout the book where, you know, keep your promises. He's teaching his son, still showing, you know, a family life, a wholesome family life if possible with the type of things that they're doing. Even the last story with the Atomic Skull, you know, for years, this is a guy that's been a villain, and Superman showing faith in him that, you know, he can get things turned around. So there's definitely a lot that, that can be, you know, take, you know, you can walk away with after reading this book.
I really like the Atomic Skull bit because I was so confused at first. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wait, he's a good guy? But I'm with it. And beyond that, I think he showed respect to that man,
right?
Who was trying to do good, even if he didn't fully believe it or understand it. He was like, "All right, you know," and he like, you know, should I call you Officer So and So? Should I call you Arnold? So I don't know. I really dug that part too, and I thought he was gonna flip, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. But I guess that would happen in a Batman book, but Superman book, yeah. He's gotta end up good. But yeah. Yeah, these are just some really good stories. I think if you're a Superman fan, or just a DC fan in general, I think you should read this book. No, it's not required reading, but it's I think as we're getting into this big Superman push, mm-hmm. it's just kind of setting us all into the right frame of mind for Clark.
Absolutely, and for DC fans, seeing Atomic Skull turn good or do something good is nothing new. I always kind of credit the animated series in Justice League Unlimited when they're fighting parademons, when Atomic Skull was, you know, helping out Hawkgirl and everyone else, and Steel. One of my favorite scenes
That's
in
right.
the Unlimited show. So Atomic Skull doing something new, or doing something good is nothing new. There you go. That's what I meant to say. Moving on. All right. Let's talk about the Flash War. All right. For the last several months, you know, these stories with Josh Williamson coming out here with The Flash, you know, Barry finally reintroduced Wally to Iris, and that was definitely a powerful issue. You have the Kid Flash, you know, all the Gorilla Grodd's out of the picture, Central City seems to be okay at the moment, and you have that little, you know, bit of serenity, and now, boom, here we are. You know, little by little, these issues are warming you up to another threat coming from the future in Hunter Zolomon. Now, I feel that with the title that they're putting out here of The Flash War, I think things are going to go, you know, way like we've never seen them before. Especially the relationship between Barry Allen and Wally West, the original Wally West. You know, since Rebirth started, Wally's been right in the thick of it. You know, he came back, he was trapped in a Speed Force, something's happening. Oh my God, you know, that's how Rebirth kicked off. Hey Barry, how's it going? I missed you, blah, blah, blah. Now, look at how that relationship has turned. These guys are literally like arguing all the time. They can't get it together. There's obviously changes happening with Wally that he can't understand. However, they're trying to do the best they can. And what's holding everybody together really is Iris West. So Iris West throughout this whole series I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed every Flash character in this book so far, and I feel like it's all culminating to something really, really big. And any time that you have Professor Zoom mentioned in there, because he's made his appearances, you've had Godspeed, but now we get somebody in Hunter Zolomon who has not made it a secret on the things he wants to do to the Flash family. So it's one thread after the other. But now where you throw in this complication of Wally West's current condition and mentality and, you know, two Flashes, you know, and now they're in the future, I'm really, really looking forward to this Flash War. Can you tell how excited I am? what say you about the Flash, Freddie?
All right, first, I thought the Grodd War was Flash War. So when I opened this and said Flash War Part 1, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay. I didn't know this was still coming. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely some things that I really dug about this. Number one, I just like the idea of them two being at odds.
Right.
It's not something that you see a whole lot of. Mm-hmm. But it's some, and it's over something that they both care deeply about. So it's not like, you know, I'm trying to think of something, but it's not like maybe if it was Linda, if it was just Linda, like, you know, that was at stake. What is Old Flash's name? Barry. I'm sorry. Barry wouldn't really feel it. Yeah, Old Flash. Barry wouldn't necessarily feel the pain of trying to protect Linda. Mm-hmm. But this is Iris that we're talking about. So it affects them both so deeply, especially since Wally just got reunited. So he really, like, you know, he's kind of in a vulnerable state.
Mm-hmm.
I also really dig the villains. Like, 25th century version of the Rogues.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool, and especially when I found out that the Golden Guardian, which is like the Golden Glider, basically, mm-hmm. except she's a Yellow Lantern, that I didn't see that coming. That was kind of a cool twist.
Agreed.
I mean, you can definitely see where it's going, and it's going to take a few issues to get there, and a surprise villain at the end was pretty fun, too, mm-hmm. on who's been orchestrating back when they were in the Flash Museum, you know, months ago, there was a figure that you're like, who could this be? So it's nice to finally get that revealed and who's actually behind all this, and who's, you know, pitting two Flashes against each other. And again, I mean, Wally, for a lot of people, is the Flash. I mean, he was the Flash for decades while Barry was dead. So it's not just like a sidekick. It's really two Flashes against each other. So it's kind of cool.
Right. I literally summed this up as a battle of timelines, you know, the Barry Allen timeline and the Wally West timeline, because you're absolutely right. You know, it was well over 30 years that Wally West was the Flash and was the only Flash people knew.
And, right.
You know, before that was Barry. And even before Barry, you know, you had the original Flash and Jay Garrick. But this one is a battle of timelines here, and with Hunter Zolomon now in the picture showing him, like, hey, Wally, you know, you better really wake up, because this is what should have happened if the timeline wasn't interrupted with. You see Linda Park there with two kids. You know, you obviously see a holographic image of Impulse. You know, to me, it's like, if you're Wally West, that would have really waken me up and said, wait a minute. What did Barry Allen really do? You know, that SOB, look what he did with Flashpoint and all of this stuff. I would have had a family. Like, his life has been completely screwed over. And it wasn't just until a couple of issues ago where he revealed himself to his own family, his aunt.
Yeah.
So Wally West has gone through a lot of trauma, as has Iris. You know, now she's starting to recollect everything. You know, now she knows Barry Allen's a Flash. You know, things are... We're starting to settle down, but now here's this big explosion with Zoom coming in. One thing that I did take away with the beautiful splash panel at the end of Zoom, I saw a little hammer on the ground there. Wonder what it's for. But I don't think it's the Norse god that many people would think it would be, because he's from the other publisher, but I want to know whose hammer that is. Anyways.
I'm pulling it up now. Oh, there is the hammer. Interesting.
Yep.
It's Harley. That's what it is.
Future Harley.
The real key to this.
No, Harley, that would be something.
DC4 with her hammer, obviously.
Yeah. But definitely, listeners, this is a highly anticipated event for Flash fans. It's part one, and there's not much backtracking if you want to find out what led up to this story. But either way, this is a good jumping on point. And for fans that have been following Hunter Zolomon, I'm sure they're going to be very excited, because this proposition here, I don't know how Wally's going to turn it down, and that was a tremendous way to end the book.
So yeah.
It does give you, like, man, you know, do you want to side with Barry? Because now you kind of see where this is heading. So very, very excited for Flash War this year. All right, let's move on to a brand new number one issue in the new Challengers. Lizzie, what are your thoughts on this book?
Oh boy. I did not like it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not intrigued. I kind of feel like the guy who, I mean, spoilers, the guy who, the one who was dead and then ended up being like, I don't want to do this, and he died, I feel like he got the easy way out, because this seems like weird slavery, and I don't know why any of these people who are now dead would not just be like, okay, so I don't want to do this in the afterlife. If you could just kill me again, that'd be great. I literally don't. There's no motivation. And maybe this is just my point of view because I am chronically ill. But I mean, if I died and then in the afterlife it was like, hey, you can be a superhero. You can have superhuman strength. You're not going to be in any of the chronic pain you're in, but I need you to do like this laundry list of things and never like divert from it. I would be like, that's pretty compelling. I'm going to think about it because that's a whole life I've never lived. But like all of these people are able-bodied, so I don't know what they're getting out of it. Like, I wasn't compelled.
Mm-hmm. So definitely you found the new challengers to be challenging.
I hate you.
Yeah.
You know I had to throw in a pun in there. Like,
but not like I've... Because usually I'm like, oh, I love puzzles, I love challenges, but this is like a challenge to finish.
Mm-hmm. Freya, what say you with the new challengers?
Okay. So I kind of agree. The only person I found interesting was the guy who died who mentioned the Cobra cult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, I want to know what he did. And then they killed him. And I'm like, that's the only character I actually wanted to learn about. Thanks, right. Guys. And then the villain looks cool, and so does their essential slave driver. I don't even know his name because I checked out after they killed him. And so, I don't know. I mean, I did like the little throwback to the Earth Prime team.
Mm-hmm.
In, I think, the third page.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, okay. I thought... And, also have the issue, why have the guy that you're going to kill within the first like 5 pages on the cover?
Agreed.
Why is he there? He's not going to be in the rest of them.
Also, why was he in the Hall of Fame later on?
Yeah.
Did anyone notice that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I noticed, but it didn't click that it makes no sense.
Yeah. Free copy. So I didn't like it. I'll give issue 2 a look because it's the first issue. Maybe it'll get better. But if it doesn't get better by issue 2, I'm done. I can't do it because these characters are so boring and stereotypical because the Asian girl's a ninja, but she has to be because she's Asian. So
mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'll give it one more shot, but after that I'm done.
Freddie, what are your thoughts on the new challengers?
I'm not really familiar with this IP, so this is kind of like my first look at the challengers. Like I might have seen them in like crossovers or something, but I don't really know who they were, what they were about.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, I will counter Lizzie's statement about what their motivation is. I think it's people don't want to die. Like, and even though they only have a short time to extend it, like, I think that they're selfish. People are just selfish enough to, like, all right, I don't want to die just yet. But I don't think that's a big enough motivation, but I think that is their motivation, not just, okay. But with that being said, I like the premise of... these temporary like hourglass thing, but it just didn't, I just can't see how long this team is going to be for. So like, I don't know how invested I should be, or is this going to be a book where the team is constantly changing, which again, how invested should I be at this point?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Yeah. I don't really have any reason to care for this book at this, from where we are. I like the premise, mm-hmm. but I just, again, I don't know, what's permanent and what's not. What I should care about. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe we'll see what the villain comes about. I mean, there's dinosaurs in it. That's cool. So, hopefully, that'll be some good art.
Hey, Godzilla. Thanks for stopping by.
Like they do have different teams for each Earth, so none of them are even recurring characters.
Wow.
Even in like past issues, it's all different.
Mm-hmm.
Like New Earth is all guys. Prime Earth has the blonde female, like I said. And they're all different.
Different okay. challenges. Good to know.
Yeah. So they're cannon fodder characters.
Pretty much. I mean, you know, again, this is another Scott Snyder-led book with Aaron Giuseppe, if I'm pronouncing it right, with Andy Kubert doing the pencils here. You know, I'll admit, you know, I've read a lot of DC books in my time. Challenges of the Unknown, very rarely. I could probably say maybe I read about 20 stories with them all time, and I still don't know what the hell's going on. So, with that being said, one, I should really go back and do my homework. But secondly, I looked at this new Challengers number one as an opportunity to learn more about what they are, what they're about, what do they do, what are they here for. You know, I always viewed them as that team outside, like outside the box. You know, the team that we don't see that's really doing, you know, making a difference. I have to agree with what was said here. Like, what's the benefit of these people after they're dead to really undergo something like this? You know, the only benefit that I could see is that if they listen to this professor, undergo these missions, and save the universe, then, in essence, they would be saving their loved ones who are alive. Other than that, I don't see any real reason. You know, and the fact that it's so random where you could just, you know, random people are picked, you know, that's crazy. You know, if I was picked, you know, God forbid, to be part of the Challengers, and I see an entire hallway of people who were there before me, I'm going to be like, I'm done. Like, there's no way I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
Like, I could be done tomorrow. Like, that's not how I want to go.
I mean, they literally replaced the dude who decided not to be interested in it and died in maybe 3 panels. Like,
right.
Yeah.
He literally just got another person out of nowhere, and instead of explaining everything, he was like, oh, just ask your teammates, they know what's going on, they also just got here 5 minutes ago.
Right. I mean, essentially, is this a newer version of the Suicide Squad, where they're going to go out on a mission, one of them doesn't make it, and just someone just beams aboard to wherever they are, and here's your new teammate, so here's tomorrow's mission, bring them up to speed.
I mean, to go off the rails a bit, because I read a lot of other countries' comics and stuff, too. Mm-hmm. It was really reminiscent of a Japanese comic, which I won't name because no one really cares. So, where it's essentially the same thing. They get thrown on a team, but they sign a contract to begin with. They're like, hey, you're dead. You're signing a contract, and if you do this X number of bounties, then you get brought back to life. And that's their motivating force, is they do all these bounties and they acquire, I guess, a sort of currency.
Mm-hmm.
And once they hit their quota, then they're brought back to life and they're human again. And I was like, well, maybe they'll have that. But no, there's no motivation whatsoever. So it's disappointing.
Right. So as soon as we get introduced to the new challengers, we get introduced to newer challengers within the first issue.
Newer challengers. Mm-hmm. That's just what it's gonna. Every time there's a reboot, it's not gonna be new challengers. It's gonna be like when you have in college and you're writing a paper and you keep sending yourself a document of it,
mm-hmm.
but then you remember to do something, so you send it again, and so all of the emails are enabled. Like, click on this one. No, this one. This is the newest one. I feel like that's happening with the challengers right now.
You know, it's if you're listening, DC. Here's an interesting idea. Why don't you let the fans vote on which challenger should live and die? Then maybe that'll really spark up more interest in this book. Because
they're just going to make all the challengers Jason Todd.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
But people were so angry that we killed Jason that they brought him back. And now everyone wants him dead again.
I mean, I don't.
That's
right.
But
okay. I imagine if he was an option for the sake of trolls and even just a joke, they would kill him again.
True.
I mean, I would do it for a joke. I do a lot of things for jokes.
I'd vote for all four of them to go because so far this issue is not really doing it for me. I was really hoping to learn more about the Challenger team, but I might have to hold on to that thought. Like Frey, I'll give issue two a whirl, but if I don't know, if we get a whole new cast of Challengers, I think I might be done. but we'll see what happens with the Challengers that are the unknown and how they'll get tested in the future. All right, so any last thoughts on any of the books that we covered today?
I will say about the Superman special, I am not a Superman fan, and I really enjoyed that. So if you are also not a Superman fan, I feel like it's a really good jumping point to just test the waters.
Yeah, I mean, I like it, and everyone knows I hate Superman, so.
True. Truer words were never spoken. It is a good jumping on point. I mean, I'm glad that they did make this a standalone issue. So definitely a worthwhile. And as Freddie mentioned earlier on, DC has been making an extra push with Superman and all of the super books. Superman is definitely an important character. So definitely a good opportunity to jump into that and read some wholesome stories rather than something a little more dire. So, definitely, again, to start closing out the podcast here, Justice League, I'm very much looking forward to what they have for the future. I just think that it started off a little bumpy. I think the ship is starting to right itself, but definitely very, very curious on how they're going to manage the rosters going forward and who can be a leaguer, who's not. When all this is all said and done, is it heroes and villains again? I think it'll eventually end up being that, but with the source wall being broken down, I just think now that it opens up the opportunity for a whole bunch of hopefully good stories to come forth from DC. Make it worth it because I wasn't a fan of the source wall being broken, but if you're gonna do it, I hope it was worth it. So I'm gonna stay positive on that. All right. So on that note, it's funny how there's four of us here. I wonder if we'll be the next four challengers.
I
I hope
don't want
not.
to die.
Dude, I'm gonna take a page out of that guy from. I don't want to be a part of this.
Yeah, for real.
Especially they make me wear a crazy suit.
They look like janitors.
They totally do.
Which I guess is fair, because, I mean, I guess they gotta clean up their trash comic.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm definitely throwing
I'm
myself into the
brutal
fire.
today.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, so if you don't hear from us by the next episode, we will definitely be challenging the unknown. Otherwise, we'll be back for episode 52. Until then, I'm your host, the 13th Crusader, signing off. We'll see you next time.
Later.
Bye. Have a good day.
This has been a production of the Undercover Capes Podcast Network. Check us out at our website, undercovercapes.com and comiccrusaders.com. And thank you for listening to
The Definitive Crusade!